The reading from the Bhagavad Gita as it is, from the third chapter, entitled Karma Yoga, text number 10. Sahayagya prajasistva puruvacha prajapati anena prasavisajam isavastistakamaduk. In the beginning of creation, the Lord of all creatures sent forth generation of men and demigods alone with sacrifices for Vishnu, and blessed them by saying, "Be thou happy by this yajna sacrifice, because its performance will bestow upon you everything desirable for living happily and achieving liberation." Purport. The material creation by the Lord of creatures, Vishnu, is a chance offered to the conditioned souls to come back home, back to Godhead. All living entities within the material creation are conditioned by material nature. Because of their forgetfulness of their relationship to Vishnu or Krishna, the Supreme Personality of Godhead. The Vedic principles are to help us understand this eternal relation, as it is stated in the Bhagavad Gita, Vedais ca sarve aham eva vedyo. The Lord says that the purpose of the Vedas is to understand Him. In the Vedas, in the Vedic hymns, it is said, Patim visvayam ishvaram. Today, no, I'm looking two things. Therefore, the Lord of the living entities is the Supreme Personality of Godhead Vishnu. In the Srimad Bhagavatam also, 2.4.20, Srila Sukadeva Goswami describes the Lord as Pati in so many ways. Sriyapatir, Yagyapatir, Prajapatir, Diyampatir, Lokapatir, Dharapatir, Patir Gatis, Chandakavishni Sattvatapam, Prasiditam Me Bhagavan Satam Pati. The Prajapati is Lord Vishnu, and He is the Lord of all living creatures, all worlds and all beauties, and the protector of everyone. The Lord created this material world to enable the conditioned souls to learn how to perform yajnas, sacrifices for the satisfaction of Vishnu, so that while in the material world, they can live very comfortably without anxiety, and after finishing the present material body, they can enter into the kingdom of God. That is the whole program for the conditioned soul. By performance of yajna, the conditioned souls gradually become Krishna conscious and become godly in all respects. In the age of Kali, the Sankirtan yajna, the chanting of the names of God, is recommended by the Vedic scriptures. And this transcendental system was introduced by Lord Chaitanya for the deliverance of all men in this age. Sankirtan yajna and Krishna consciousness go well together. Lord Krishna, in his devotional form as Lord Chaitanya, is mentioned in the Srimad Bhagavatam 11.5.32 as follows, with special reference to the Sankirtan Yajna. Krishna Varnam Trisa Krishnam Sangupangasta Parasadam Yajna Sangirtana Prajar Yajanti Hisumeda Saha. In this age of Kali, people who are endowed with sufficient intelligence will worship the Lord, who is accompanied by His associates by performance of Sankirtan Yajna. Other yajnas prescribed in the Vedic literature are not easy to perform in this age of Kali, but the Sankirtan Yajna is easy and sublime for all purposes, as recommended in Bhagavad Gita also, 9.14. So, let's have a little look at the commentary of Srila Baladeva Vichabhusan on this verse. Translation is slightly different also. Vishnu, having created the population along with sacrifice in the beginning, spoke, "May you increase yourself by this sacrifice. May it fulfill your desire for liberation by supplying bodily maintenance and knowledge of Atma." Commentary. This verse shows that it's wrong to maintain the body without offering sacrifice to Vishnu. Prajapati refers to the Supreme Lord Vishnu, as is seen from Shruti statements such as Patim Visvayatneshwaram. Prabhupada quotes that also. In the Vedic hymns, Prabhupada says, it is se patim visvayat yatmeshwaram. So we can see he is the Lord of the universe, he is the master of the universe, the Lord of the soul, from the Mahanarayan Upanishad 13.2. Prabhupada doesn't give the reference, he just says in the Vedic hymns. Also, this is confirmed from Smriti statements such as Brahma Prajanam Patir Achutaso. Brahma, the master of offspring, is Achuta, Vishnu Purana 1.15.57. But we see that Prabhupada then quotes the Bhagavatam verse, Sriya Patir, Yogya Patir, Praja Patir. At the beginning of creation, Pura, the Lord, Yajna or Vishnu, created the progeny such as devas and men, accompanied by sacrifice. He bestowed receptacles of name and form suitable for pursuing the goals of life to those jivas who were previously devoid of names and forms, being merged into himself, the cause of material energy. In that state of being merged, they were incapable of pursuing the goals of human life. Having revealed to them sacrifice and the Vedas which describe it, the Lord, being merciful, then said to them, "You should increase yourselves, prasad visyadvum, by this sacrifice offered to me, described in the Vedas, anena. May this sacrifice, asa, offered to me, be the giver of the desired goal of liberation, ista kamaduk, through supplying unto you bodily maintenance and knowledge of Atma, which purifies the heart." Srila Prabhupada also, in his purport, makes the point that this yajna will give us everything that we need in this life, and that at the same time it will make all the arrangements for us to go back to Godhead. So we see that basically the purport that Srila Prabhupada gives is very close to the commentary of Srila Baladeva Vijayabhusa. I mean, it's not like taking the verse from a very different angle. Prabhupada adds this one particular verse, which he may have received from a different quote. In this way, Srila Prabhupada was the loyal servant of the previous acharyas. And as the loyal servant, he was not trying to obscure them or in any way outdo them with his extraordinary scholarship, but rather he was very faithful. He was faithfully and carefully presenting the conclusions as he had heard. This requires utmost humility, because we see that Tarka Pratista Sruti Avibina Nasa Varisi Matu Nabinam, that the generally speaking, the rishis are all trying to give their own interpretation, their own angle on some philosophical point, which even amongst Vedic rishis was a prominent feature. What to speak about the mundane speculators of the age of Kali, where this has now been institutionalized as a must. Right? If one wants to academically make a career, one has to come up with a particular individual angle and a particular individual slant, otherwise one's thesis will not be accepted by any supervisor. So, like this, we see that the disciplic succession is of a different nature. The disciplic succession is where we carefully repeat the information assimilated from the previous acharyas, but not like parrots in the Srimad Bhagavatam, we find that it is described how Suta Goswami was perfectly describing whatever he had heard through the sages of Naimisaranya. Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati mentions that there were, by the way, as many as 60,000 sages in Naimisaranya. So how all these 60,000 sages could hear what was being said is difficult to figure out. But anyway, that was going on. And Suta Goswami was being welcomed by the sages of Naimisaranya. And Sonaka Rishi, who was the eldest or senior and most learned, was the spokesman on behalf of the sages of Naimisaranya. And Sonaka Rishi, at one point, after Suta Goswami has given his initial answers to the questions which were raised by the sages, then Sonaka Rishi is becoming so satisfied and so ecstatic that he calls out, "Sutta, Sutta, Mahabhaga." Right? He says twice, "Sutta, Sutta," not once but twice. And it is explained in the purport, due to his ecstasy. Due to his ecstasy. So Suta Goswami was becoming very ecstatic. And Sonaka and all the sages were becoming equally ecstatic in the whole descriptions of Srimad Bhagavatam. So the entire exchange was of like a high caliber of ecstasy. So then it is said that as Suta Goswami spoke Srimad Bhagavatam, it was yatamati, according to his particular realization. It is translated as personal realization. And it is stated that according to personal realization, the message is to be presented. In previous verses, if I would have the first canto here, I could read it now to you, but didn't bring that one. But in previous verses, there is a reference where personal realization is already being described, and there in particular the connection is made that there is no question of realization if it is not centered around the service of Krishna. So service of Krishna is the central key to personal realization. Otherwise, how can one present scriptures with personal realization? So therefore, the personal realization is dealing with different levels. It deals with what it's like to practice the process of devotional service, what is being experienced as we are practicing our devotional service in the stage of sadhana bhakti, as we are practicing devotional service in the stage of bhava bhakti, and as we are practicing devotional service in the stage of prema bhakti. And in each of these stages, there is a different level of perception of the Supreme Lord. But all along, realization means smartavyam satatam vishnu vismartavyo na jatu sit sarvavirini sedushu etiore vakinkaram. It means that at all times the Lord must be remembered, and that at all times the Lord may never be forgotten, and that all injunctions are simply for that purpose. that in the initial stages of devotional service in practice, sadhana bhakti, the remembrance of the Lord may be of a different nature than the remembrance of the Lord in bhava bhakti is described in the scriptures. It is, for example, said that in the beginning stages, one is trying to cultivate eagerness to hear about the pastimes of Krishna and eagerness to serve Krishna. Tatra lulyam api mulyam ekalam, that greed, that eagerness for devotional service to Krishna, that is described as the main key to Krishna Bhakti Rasa Bhavita Mati. That is the main key to enter into this science of transcendental rasa in Krishna's service. But then we see that in bhava, the experience... Now, first of all, in sadhana, the remembrance also must be constant. It is said that the Madhyam Adhikari must gradually come to the point where he's constantly chanting, where he's just constantly chanting. Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur is stressing this point, and Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu also mentioned it to the residents of Kulinagram, who visit him in Jagannath Puri, that the Madhyam Adhikari is Nirantar Krishna Nama Sankirtan. He is without end, incessantly chanting the holy name. Still, the incessant chanting of the sadhaka is of a different nature than the endless chanting of one who chants in bhava. We see it is described that in bhava, a person develops another level of eagerness. And there the word for eagerness given is not lolyam, but samutkanta. It is said that one who chants or serves the Lord in bhava is also doing so with great eagerness, but that eagerness is known as samutkanta. And it is said samutkanta is of a different nature than lolyam, right? Because samutkanta is particularly of the nature that one wants to constantly associate with Krishna, constantly. So samutkanta is particularly the eagerness to associate with Krishna directly, and therefore smartavyam satatam vishnur vismartavyo na jatu sit, to always remember Krishna and never forget him, in bhava has a totally different dimension. Then, of course, we get as Stai Bhava begins to manifest, then we get the transformations, the ecstatic transformations, the eightfold ecstatic transformations begin to manifest. And then we find descriptions in the Chaitanya Charitamrita how these transformations begin to intensify in prem, and that in the beginning, in prem, the ecstatic transformations are like in the smoking stage, which means they can still be concealed. So the devotee internally is experiencing the greatest love for Krishna and the greatest ecstasy, but somehow or other he can hide it. But it comes through a little bit, the smoking stage. And then it increases to the blazing stage and so on, until eventually it reaches the intensely blazing stage, known as Sudipta. And that intensely blazing stage, or Sudipta, was the level of realization of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. So to remember Krishna always is the duty for every devotee. It doesn't matter whether one is beginning his devotional service or whether one is at the topmost level of devotional service, the injunction is the same. It's not that the beginner is allowed to sometimes remember Krishna and at other times forget Krishna. No, no. There is never a moment that we are authorized to forget Krishna. And therefore, constant remembrance of Krishna must be cultivated. Anushilanam. This is very important, that there is cultivation. If there is no cultivation of constant remembrance of Krishna, how can we remember? Therefore, the performance of yajna, which is here described in this verse, is for that same purpose. Because sarva vidini sedushur, etioriva kinkaram, all the regulative principles of sacrifice, which is being performed according to time, place, and circumstance, according to the various yugas, is for the purpose of remembering Krishna. So therefore, in all stages, we remember Krishna. And so in the neophyte stage of devotional service, when one is still materially conditioned, and when one is still attracted to the material energy, still the injunction is the same. We must always remember Krishna and never forget him. So therefore we need intense cultivation. If there is not intense hearing, intense chanting, intense serving Krishna, how are we going to remember Krishna? So that is to be kept in mind, that the injunction to always remember Krishna, never forget him, is valid in all the stages of devotional service. And in the more advanced stages of devotional service, that remembrance is so powerful and so strong that it's paralyzing everything else. We see in Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, we see in Srimati Radharani, we see that there is no question of ever not being overwhelmed by remembrance of Krishna. When not seeing Krishna, there was nothing to look at for Srimati Radharani. Nothing to look at in this world. Absolutely nothing. She would just look with empty eyes. There was nothing. Nothing of interest. We are still wandering around and seeing many, many things that interest our minds. Oh, beautiful bird. A wonderful place, actually. Very nice nature. Yeah? Nice lake, nice waters, nice bay, nice sea. A wonderful feature of nature. Just like you can see Cape Town, and you can see how the Atlantic Ocean and the Indian Ocean are meeting. And the Atlantic is green, and the Indian is blue. And you can see how this green sea is merging with the blue sea, and you see a line, and you see foam and current, and it's impressive. Two oceans are meeting. I mean, the confluence of two oceans, that's something else than the confluence of two rivers. Two oceans, right? So it is impressive, without a doubt. But for the gopis, nothing but Krishna was impressive. Just only Krishna could impress them, and nothing else. Everything else would just leave them dull, leave them totally switched off, right? Spontaneously, not being able to even look at it, not being able to be distracted by anything. We, on the contrary, constantly distracted. Smartavyam satatam Vishnu, remembering Krishna, and then distracted again, thinking of other things. And of course, the more we have faith that the material energy can offer us happiness and enjoyment, the more we will be distracted. The less we have faith in the material energy, the less it will distract us. Therefore, it is very important to very thoroughly understand the limited nature of the material energy and how it doesn't work. How, no matter how attractive the material world appears to be, that really there is no question of being successful in material life. even when we have everything, everything we could imagine, right? Everything. We may be foolish and we may think, well, but this is not so bad, it could be so much worse. Actually, and looking at it from that perspective, this is very nice. We are very fortunate. We have a nice house in a nice place. I was reading a little bit in a book which was given to me by someone in South Africa who grew up in a family of coloreds. Coloreds are a mix of black and white, but somehow or other he was totally black. And not only that, that he had kroeshaar, right? As said, you know. So like he had all the symptoms of like being black, but his eyes were the wrong color, right? For being black. So he's part of the colored community, and there are many in the Cape area, because it was a main settlement of the Dutch, right? Who of course didn't mind to keep some African girls for their own pleasure. And there, in the place where he grew up, life was so heavy. His father, an extreme drunk, would come home and would just every day beat his wife and children, and had made like a rubber hose with a chain inside for beating, which was like splitting open their backs as he was beating. And sometimes the whole family would just attack altogether the father, right, to keep him under control, but he was too strong. And then he would like scream and holler in the middle of the night and send his son out with a little money in the darkness, which was dangerous because there were gangs, youth gangs, roaming around that would just beat and or sometimes kill for no reason. And then he was going with an empty bottle, which meant he had money. Yeah. So in that way, everyone could see he had money, and somehow or other he had to get the drink. That foul yellow alcohol, he called in the book, he calls it the yellow piss. He had to go and get the yellow piss for his father, right? Who would like, you know, drink this foul stuff, right? And he hated it. So the book is describing not such a sweet, protected, nice, sheltered background. And our friend, who became an established writer and also got into poetry, he told me, he gave me the book, and he told me, he said, he wanted to go to Holland because he wanted to see the country that had done it, that had like done it to them, you know. He just wanted to see it, yeah, for himself with his own eyes. And he brought his poetry, and as he brought his poetry in Dutch literary circles, they appreciated his poetry and they wanted to offer him a price, right? And he just used the word kak. He says, I don't want your kak. He didn't want their price. He didn't want their price. He turned it down, refused the price. That's not in the book, that's he told me personally. And he said, he was so amazed. So amazed. He said, are these the people? Are these the people? in their petty little houses, in this petty little country, right? These petty little people, are they the ones? Right? Are they the ones that took us over? He said, he couldn't believe it. Anyway, that's just a little bit of national history for those who are from Holland. And so we could see what an intense suffering, some people are experiencing on the planet, and how difficult it is then to come to the level of sacrifice. Sacrifice is almost like a luxury of the ones who can afford it. When you're starving and when you have to fight for your bread with other hungry kids, right? Like dogs fighting over some food, right? Street dogs, right? Kids fighting like that, right? Then it's more difficult to engage in sacrifice. So we are privileged in so many ways that we are able to perform this sacrifice, that we can afford it, that we even have the time and the luxury to think of spiritual life, and that we don't just have to struggle to survive. Because that also exists. But yet, there are devotees everywhere, and also devotees coming out of such underdog conditions, who somehow or other are very noble, and somehow or other, at least within, maintain some inner decency. Prabhupada also describes that on the streets of Calcutta, there was this blind man accompanied by his wife, and said, and the blind man was very clean. His cloth was very clean. And he was sitting begging at the street, and Prabhupada noticed it, and noticed that actually the wife was very pious. Because after all, she was washing the clothes and serving this man very nicely. And Prabhupada noticed their noble qualities. So sacrifice means simply to act according to the will of the Supreme Lord. Sacrifice may differ from person to person. We were reading the Vishnu Purana, which we just purchased last Sunday at a discount price. Gauranga sold it to me, really. He told me how good it was. And then, there's a description of the age of Kali, of the sudras of the age of Kali, and of the women of the age of Kali. And Vyasadeva, there were some sages, they wanted to come and ask questions to Vyasadeva. And when they saw Vyasadeva, they heard him speaking out loud, how fortunate, well done, O sudras of Kali Yuga, well done, O women of Kali Yuga, well done, well done. So it's like he was totally, the sages were totally confused, that the sudras, the women of Kali Yuga, well done, well done. But everyone knows that in the age of Kali, the sudras, they keep no principles, that virtually speaking, they are total debauchees, and that they are not able to keep their word, that they are not able to adhere to any austerities or any restrictions whatsoever, and that they just give in to their senses like that. And everybody knows that the women in the age of Kali are like prostitutes and are just mixing freely with all kind of men, that men and women will stay together just upon agreement without any marriage or whatsoever, and that simply sex is the main principle for being together, and so on. So, well done, well done. The sages couldn't understand. But they humbly inquired from Vyasadev for some clarification, if you would be so kind. Vyasadev said, "Welcome, my dear sages. How can I serve you?" He said, "We came to ask you some questions, but before we ask these questions, maybe you could clarify what you meant when you said sudras and women of Kali Yuga, well done." And Vyasadev then explained how the well done for the sudras, because even although they will not be able to perform any sacrifice properly, even although they will not be able to engage in yajna, as in previous ages, the brahmanas would perform yajnas for a very long duration of time with great difficulty to get the result. Now in the age of Kali, even a little bit of an endeavor in the right direction, immediately, great reward, therefore well done, well done. And the ladies, they don't even if they don't follow very nicely in the age of Kali, as long as they're chaste to their husbands, yeah, they'll get all the benefits that their husbands get. Yeah. Therefore, well done, O ladies of Kali Yuga. So it is explained. So this is the age where sacrifice is so difficult. This is the age where the sacrifice is so much simplified, and this is the age where even that is so difficult, to chant the holy name. How can we do it? This is that age. So it is interesting to read kind of a little bit of this background information of the nature of the residents of this era, so that we can look at ourselves and see that we too are manda sumanda matiyo manda bhagyahi upadruta, also lazy, not very intelligent, also always agitated, not very fortunate, that we too are just having so much misfortune, so much bad karma. So much bad karma is there. In previous ages, they don't walk around with little pieces of glass in front of their eyes. It's like, what a strange thing, actually. The first time I wore them, I also thought, like, is this it now? Now will for the rest of my life my vision be reduced to that which I can see, to these tiny little pieces of glass? And half of the time you look over the brill, over the glasses, and everything is kind of blurry, and so on and so on. Kali Yuga. All power diminished. So some devotees have spoken about nam-yajnas, performing nam-yajnas. Just as in previous ages, the sages would assemble to together organize a very great sacrifice and to jointly engage in a sankirtan yajna is very powerful. Just as now, the devotees around the world are distributing books, and it is like special. There is some sense of everyone is doing it. I was in Finland, and the devotees were going out, and I landed at 12 noon at mine at minus 14, that's the warmest moment of the day, and what to say. They were going out and doing more than 100 books a day, quite the big ones, but that's really substantial. What a yajna, what a yajna. Reports I got from a devotee in Germany who did like 640 books last week. But in 1 week. But it's a good average, though. Not super, not Superman, right? Who broke the world record with doing it in 1 day, but doing it in 1 week. That's quite a steady week. That's a week of hard work. That's a week of like being out there every day for and putting in the time and the effort. So that spirit of sacrifice is still alive. Of course, scriptures are mentioning different sacrifices. Tapomaya yagya, swadhyaya yagya. One can perform austerities, physical austerities. One can study scriptures. And all such yagyas are also beneficial. After all, it is said that even the saintly persons, pavaninam manisinam, are being purified by the performance of yajna. But sankirtan yajna is the topmost. And this sankirtan yajna means the glorification of Krishna. That is required. So we are here today to kind of remember the importance of remembering Krishna. We are here to remember where we are from, the age of Kali. We are to remember our fallen position, and we are here to remember our dependence on the process. And if we just depend on this process of Shravanam and Kirtanam, of hearing and chanting, then Shravanam, Kirtan, Jalachitana, then the Bhakti Lata Beach can actually grow properly. Otherwise, our Bhakti Lata Beach, our devotional creeper, will not grow. And then we cannot expect to reach the lotus feet of Krishna in Golok, and to ever reach Krishna praying. Bahu janmana kariyari shravana kirtanam tautana paya Krishna pada danam. That one may perform this chanting for many, many births, but still one will not attain the desired result of this chanting, which is Krishna praying, if one commits the offenses against the holy name. So therefore, somehow or other, we have to make a tremendous endeavor to conquer the 10 offenses. That is our first and foremost mission, practically. If there's anything to conquer in ourselves, right, then it is the tendency to commit these 10 offenses. Because these 10 offenses against the holy name are really, that's what block us from realizing the glories of the chanting. Bahu janmana kariyari. And it can take many, many births. So, otherwise, the Sankirtan Yajna is so strong, and the blessings of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu are so strong, that and the special benedictions upon the sudras of Kali Yuga are there, and therefore very, very quickly, very quickly, we can get the results. So somehow or other, that is our mission, to very, very quickly achieve this result of the Sankirtan Yoga. And the result will be that we are absorbed in ecstasy in the association of devotees, desiring to just somehow or other involve everyone in this ecstasy, to share it with everyone. There's no question of preaching for the sake of preaching, because Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu liked preaching, because preaching is the essence, and because we every day need to hear from a little book how it is the essence, so that we can keep focus and understand that it is the essence. But rather, it is the essence, because it is the greatest ecstasy. And what else is there to do? Everyone has to be part of it. No one exempt. All human beings, even all the animals, all living beings, pasu, juri, what was it, pasu, dana, pasu, juri, dana, pasu, navidara, that the stones are meant to melt. The stones must melt in ecstasy. The birds must sing in ecstasy. All living beings must be touched. The trees, the echo of the chanting of the devotees is the chanting of the trees. And in this way, all living beings must be absorbed in the chanting. Even the sukshma jivas must be delivered. Any questions or comments? Someone has equal amount of sinful activities.
Someone is doing spiritual life, positive spiritual activities, but at the same time, all the half of his time is doing all kinds of nonsense.
I see. Nam no bala papati buddhi. What can be said? If someone is consciously committing sinful activities on the strength of the holy name, then Krishna will not accept his service with great enthusiasm, and therefore Krishna will deprive him from his mercy. If, however, a person is very much materially conditioned, and he's trying to overcome his material conditioning, but he cannot. He's just somehow or other so conditioned to sense gratification that he keeps on struggling. But yet, in spite of being helplessly swept up on the waves of Maya, still he keeps on struggling to stay Krishna conscious, and he always turns back to Krishna. In such a case, Krishna will give him a lot of mercy. So, therefore, the scenario that you describe depends on the mentality of the person, and cannot be measured by the time of, 50% service to Krishna, 50% service to sense gratification. It depends on in which mood it is done. Because in this age, it is very difficult, very, very difficult. Prabhupada said that just by following four regulative principles in this age, one will be considered to be like a great saintly personality. And yet, elsewhere it is mentioned, but that is only the platform where human life begins, and anything lower than that is animal life. Right? So what is so, but one who is considered to follow four regulated principles is in Kali Yuga considered to be a great saint. But by scriptural standards, only a human being. There was that book from Desmond Morris, The Naked Ape, and Desmond Morris was a zoologist. And as a zoologist, he was like, he had studied monkeys, and he was making a parallel between the behavior of people and the behavior of monkeys. And he was showing that people basically are not people, but that they're just monkeys. And he's giving all the lists, a whole list of, it's interesting book, a whole list of how they are just monkeys by, you know, showing all the symptoms of monkeys. As a zoologist, you get lists of human beings. And it's like, yes, people have degraded to the level of monkeys. Without religious principles, equal to animals. Quran.
So if somebody doesn't like Java, but he sings all day,
Same question on Sunday.
Yeah, but it's different because. That Adar,
And that ultimately there are no hard and fast rules for this chanting. So, the chanting of japa is particularly there as a systematic way of chanting, counting our chanting, and increasing our chanting, and to come to Kirtaniya Sadahari, to the point where we're always chanting the glories of the Holy Name. But if someone is simply always singing the holy name of the Lord 24 hours a day, yeah, you can also go back to God. Why not?
It said that the devotee, that he sees the material world as dukkhalayam, as ashvatam, as a place full of miseries and temporary. Very
pessimistic view.
This other time
it
said that it's
Vishram Purna
Sukhaya, it's just the whole universe full of happiness, full of bliss.
Quite transcendental.
Mm. What is the
difference between the two?
Yeah.
Okay, I'll get into the sec, but I just had an afterthought for while you're talking, which I want to still say to Gauranga, is that in one way I find it a rhetorical question. Because I don't think anybody can sing the holy name all day without following, without taking shelter of the sampradaya. You see, and the sampradaya gives us a system of japa and so on. So in one sense, this process of theoretically, if you chant all day, if you sing all day, yes, you go back to God. But who can do that? Nobody. Okay, now back to your question. That the On the one hand, we can see the material world as a place of misery where everything is temporary, and on the other hand, we can see the whole universe as blissful. The first level is the understanding of the sadhaka, the understanding of the devotee who needs to deepen his motivation to get out of the material world and to get purified and to become very convinced that kinchit kevalaya bhaktya, that there's nothing but devotional service, vasudev parayana, to be always absorbed in the service of the Lord. But the uttamadhikari, who is just constantly relishing the mercy of the Supreme Lord, who is seeing that everything is going on by the mercy of the Supreme Lord, and that there's no one exempt from this mercy, he's just amazed how Krishna has so brilliantly arranged the distribution of his mercy. It is just inconceivable. Yeah? How transcendence is the underlying principle of everything. Yeah? Krishna's mercy is behind everything. So he sees constantly Krishna's mercy, and therefore he is totally jubilant at the total arrangement. And even in the midst of all the suffering, he's just laughing at it. And just like Krishna, because Prahasan, Senior Vior Madhye Prahasan, he is smiling in between the two armies. Arjuna is Visidantam, he is lamenting. Because Krishna sees these things all from the eternal perspective. And what is 640 million people dead? It's not like a major event, not very significant. It's just totally meaningless, insignificant thing. 640 million people dead. 640 million. So, it's the Uttamadhikari platform. The blissful platform, the ecstatic platform. Premanjana Churita Bhakti Vilochanena. It is Premanjana. Bhakti Vilochana. With eyes full of bhakti, then one can see this whole universe as blissful. But still more blissful is to see Lord Chaitanya Sankirtan movement, because it's just amazing what it can do. Right? It's just amazing to see a transformation and how a person can immediately brought to pure devotional service. Everyone may get the mercy of the Lord, but then, shortcut, bang, take him to pure devotional service right away. It's just amazing how fallen conditioned souls are serving Krishna, are chanting the holy name. The highest activity of Golok, Golokir Premadana Harinama Sankirtana, it's just amazing.
How should neophyte devotee cultivate his faithlessness in the material world?
The neophyte devotee tends to have a tendency to try and convince himself that things are not enjoyable. Although he feels very attracted to the material energy. So on the one hand, he feels very attracted to the material energy, and therefore if something is beautiful, and then he's trying to kind of deny the beauty and say, no, it's not beautiful, actually, because he can barely resist the beauty. So he's trying to see how it's not beautiful. But it is difficult. It is difficult. Just like one can say, the body is just a bag full of horrible substances. And that may be true, but it's covered by some very nice skin at the same time. Which is, so who cares what's inside, as long as it stays there and the soft skin is on top. So it's not enough, that argument, really. It doesn't really work. So just by trying to remind us how the body is a bag full of horrible substances, is not going to really cure us from sexual desires. But by thoroughly, on a deeper level, understanding how it just doesn't work, even if you have it all, and just thoroughly understand you have it all. The most beautiful woman in the world, or the most beautiful man in the world, still not enough. Not enough for you, not enough for her, and so on. So one has to think deeper and deeper, and not with that despair. The neophyte is like with fear. Oh boy, it's so overwhelming. How am I going to resist this? And looking desperately for arguments to kind of shoot it down. Because otherwise, if I'm not able to shoot down the attractiveness of this, then it's going to overpower me. But on a deeper level, we can just see that actually, even the attraction, it falls short. It always does fall short, every time again. Therefore, no matter how good it looks, know it to be the illusory energy. Because underneath, there's just always the inevitable suffering. So one must thoroughly understand how the material energy is not offering us any shelter. As long as we think there maybe is some shelter, that maybe one corner is better than another corner, if we think, then we are in trouble. So if we think there's a particularly good corner of the material world, then we should also understand how even that very good corner is not so good. Not so good, actually. Doesn't work either. The material world is broken. And it cannot be fixed. Nothing. We must understand how it is broken, how it doesn't work. Then we'll become more focused on Krishna. So on the one hand, we understand how the material world is just a broken place, and in the other sense, we'll just absorb ourselves in service to Krishna as much as possible. And then every time we look back, the material of the world looks less and less significant. So from both sides we approach it.
Yeah, in my experience it does help a little bit, like to understand these things, but still, even just by understanding it, that doesn't really uproot the
desire.
True.
That's true. Bhakti kechit kevalaya bhakti vasudev parayana agam tuvati krasniyam niharami upaskara. Only devotional service can take out the roots of sinful desire from the heart, nothing else. But the understanding is still important. Because, you see, In our spiritual life, there are two levels. One is the interim level of the mode of goodness, and the other one is the transcendental platform. So, although we're in a transcendental process, we cannot immediately make it to the transcendental platform. Therefore, we need to be in the interim level of the mode of goodness. So, the mode of goodness means we need arguments, we need reason, we need to have insights of intelligence to kind of stay strong and firm on the transcendental platform. We are deeply inspired there.
That means on the goodness level, always this kind of fear will be there?
Yeah, on the level of goodness, one cannot be free from the power of Maya. One must, so bhayam dvitiya binivesitasyat, the anxiety is there, that the material energy is too overpowering. Yes. Only on the transcendental platform can one really overcome it.
So this fear is not
didn't
the fear of the neophyte is experiencing in the kind of arguing with this is not necessarily bad.
No, the fear of Maya is good. It is not bad. If that fear translates into us taking shelter in devotional service and in being very careful in associating with Maya. So that fear is important, that we are therefore extra careful with Maya. All of us can deal with the opposite sex and take more time than necessary. And if we do, we might do that out of sense gratification. And if we've done it once, we're going to do it twice, and so on. And some attachment will grow from it. And in this way, suddenly, it's like in one purport, Srila Prabhupada explains, he says that the attraction between men and women, etc., he said, it always works. Always. Although sometimes we artificially control it, yeah. But actually, it always works. So that's interesting, that we artificially control it, but that somehow or other the pressure is always there. And, until we are transcendent. Yeah.
I would like to ask you, devotees speak about the same topic in a very similar way. One is having less realization, another one is having more realization. They both speak in the same way, but what this means, as you said, speaking according to realization.
Yeah, speaking according to realization is a big topic, because we think that doesn't mean that one may speak according to his own personal opinions. It doesn't seem to refer to having personal opinions. But rather, it seems to refer to one, realization of sadhana bhakti for the sadhaka, who is faithfully practicing the process. And by faithfully practicing the process, the sadhana bhakti, the sadhaka, is getting some practical experience of what happens when one is following this process of sadhana bhakti. That is one level of realization. In Bhava Bhakti, one can when speaking of realization, one is actually experiencing the bhavas. And one is, and at that point, obviously, one's realization is the foremost principle. For the sadhaka, the authorized version of the acharyas is his principal object of meditation, and then he may add some of his own realizations. For the one in bhava bhakti, it's just his realizations are very overwhelming. For the one in prem, right, it may sometimes not at all relate to scripture, just like Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu was calling out, Gopi, Gopi, Gopi. And the students came and said, what, you're calling out Gopi, Gopi, Gopi? Why are you not chanting Krishna, Krishna, Krishna? You should chant the name of Krishna, not the name Gopi. And Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu chased him with a stick, because at that point he was in above of man, of being upset with Krishna. So, due to being unfaithful. So we see that Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu lived in transcendental madness. Right? So his realization was no longer conscious, there was not even an element of noticing his own realization. See, in an earlier stage, in the stage of sadhaka, whenever a sadhaka has a realization and comes out with it, then he thinks himself, well, that was quite a realization, actually. And he's an observer of his own realizations. Even in bhava, that may still be the case. But in the case of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, he was no longer the observer of his own realizations. They were simply happening, and therefore there was no calculation anymore. When he jumped in the Yamuna, because it was the ecstatic Yamuna, he forgot to get out, and he had to be pulled out. He was on his own, he was making no endeavor to come out of the water, after all, the Yamuna. So, like that, Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu scraped his face against the wall of the Gambira. He somehow or other got out of the room, nobody knew how. He was running on the hills, on the dunes at Govardhan, in Puri, thinking them to be Govardhan, and so on. Mad. Transcendental madness. So the realization is manifesting in different ways. But the central focus must be Krishna Tattva. Realization means Krishna Tattva. Who is Krishna? How is he the Supreme Lord? And what is our relationship with him? That is Krishna Tattva. Because looking upon Krishna, we can never just look at Krishna and describe Krishna. But always looking upon Krishna means there's a relationship at all time. Therefore, we must, in Krishna Tattva, always include our own position as the servant. So Krishna Tattva includes the descriptions about the name, fame, form and pastimes of Krishna, and our own position as the servant of Krishna. That is Krishna Tattva.
You said about always remember Krishna and forget him. What about then always remember spiritual master and never forget him?
It's no difference. By always remembering the spiritual master, never forgetting him, we are following in the footsteps of Prahlad Maharaj, who was invited by Lord Nrisimhadev to now engage directly in his service. And Prahlad said, but how can I give up the service of my spiritual master? He has given me everything, so I can only continue in the service of my spiritual master. I have no other desire. So there's no difference in that sense. But the spiritual master, right, will always tell us, serve Krishna. The spiritual master will not just say, serve me. Serve it, because the spiritual master himself is serving Krishna. So the service of the spiritual master includes the service of Krishna. It's like sometimes people are very eager, they want to render that personal service, to a spiritual master. They want to like do something for his personal comfort. You can say that this is like the highest thing, but the dear most to the spiritual master is not all his personal comfort, but rather to see that his disciples do something for Krishna. So the spiritual master is always eager to engage his disciples in seeing to the comfort of Krishna, to the glorification of Krishna for himself. How much does he need? The last jump I missed, I couldn't kind of, I'm a little deaf still, and something with Adhyatmika, but I couldn't understand the connection.
The real cause of suffering is not the material body. That was the conclusion, because the person and the soul are both in the body.
Yeah.
They are qualitatively the same. So the conclusion was that the body is not the cause of suffering for the individual, it is something else.
Yeah.
This conclusion would be against the...
That's true. The body is not the cause of suffering, it is false ego that is the cause of suffering. It is the false identification with the body that is the cause of the suffering. Prakriti kriyamanani gunakarmani sarvasa ahankara vimudat makartaham iti manyate. It is the bewildered spirit soul who is under the influence of the three modes of material nature, who is identifying with the body. And that is the cause of his suffering. Otherwise, no suffering. Therefore, ihaya shahari adasya karmana manasagirya nikala swabhi vasasya jivanmukta sujite. One can be jivanmukta while in the body, liberated soul while in the body. So it's the identification with the body that is the cause of suffering. Therefore, false ego is the problem. When we are free from false ego, will we be free from suffering? Then we don't identify, like Hari Sori said to Prabhupada, when he saw that Prabhupada had a swollen cheek, but Prabhupada, you're having a toothache. Prabhupada said, we are tolerant. And he never spoke about it again. And then it went away after some days. His cheek came down, and he just That was it. There was no no big drama, no ambulance, no no operation, no disturbed mind, no meditation. Prabhupada was not meditating on the on the matter. He's meditating on Krishna. So Adhyatmika Klesh, thinking of the sufferings of body and mind. But he was not absorbed in these things. He was absorbed in Krishna, in remembrance of Krishna. So what was the relevance of this suffering? It wasn't the kind of tolerance where one tolerates just, oh, someone on earth tolerates, oh, I have to tolerate this. Ooh, I'm going to tolerate this. Don't know how, but I'm going to tolerate this. Not in that mood, but in the mood of just being absorbed in Krishna. Then the tolerance is automatic. Because the meditation is on Krishna. Then no Adiyatmika Klesh. No Adipadrikali Taitikai. No Klesh. Klesagni, Subhada, devotional service, Klesagni, it destroys all klesh. You're not loud enough.
I read one paper about Lord Chaitanya being in the mood of Krishna in Bhagavata. And there were some references that his associates were considering themselves to be in male bodies. Those associates were considering themselves to be Nagaris.
Kauranga Nagaris. It's an apa sampradaya.
But that paper was presenting this a bona fide.
But in the Chaitanya Charitamrita, this is rejected as an apa sampradaya. And it said Lord Chaitanya is himself always in the mood of Srimati Radharani. And therefore, this is like a totally rasabhas type of philosophy. Totally rejected in the Chaitanya Charitamrita as being bogus, as being contradictory in mellow against the mood of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, who is absorbed in himself, in the mood of Srimati Radharani, and therefore his associates associating with him like gopis in the relationship with Krishna, totally out of place, inappropriate, rasabhas, and condemned, strongly condemned in the CC.
I don't want to disturb, but in that paper there were quite famous
this. I don't know, but it sounds to me like a condemned paper. Well, what can I say? I think that the paper itself is I don't know who's the author of the paper.
There's like different arati songs of Bhaktivinoda Thakur. One is called the other arati, in which the scene turns into Goloka Vrindavan. That's how could we...
Gaura Gadadhara is something else. The Gaura Gadadhara relationship is not to be shared, like that others are entering into that. It's an internal exchange between Gaura and Gadadhara. It's not a public exchange. And so, therefore, this Gauranga Nagari idea is not not acceptable. What exists between Gaura and Gadadhara, where Gadadhara is the manifestation of the Shakti Tattva of Srimati Radharani also, then in that relationship with Gadadhara, yes, there is Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu is sometimes relating in the mood of Krishna, but that is a internal exchange between them. It's not at all the predominant mood of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. rather the predominant mood of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu is that mood of experiencing the mellow of Srimati Radharani, and that's his predominant meditation. And when Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu is in Puri, right, in that Leela, where he fully manifesting his ecstatic love, that's his constant meditation. He's constantly in this Mahabhava. Yes, he is, but when he is, but then he appears in the golden form. And it says that he appears in the golden form. Lord Chaitanya explains, he says, actually, my body is not golden. My body is not golden. But because I have taken this bath, this mood of Srimati Radharani, my body is just turned golden, although it is not. Right? But when I'm in this bath, it's golden. So Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu was sometimes displaying the mood of Krishna, sometimes, in relation to his devotees, and so on. But as I said, especially when Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu spent the end of his Antya Leela in Jagannath Puri, he began to constantly display his internal ecstasies. And these internal ecstasies were all in the mood of Srimati Radharani. He was not displaying internal ecstasies in the mood of Krishna, who was meditating on the Ras Leela with the gopis. When he was in the mood of Krishna, then Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu was generally acting as the Supreme Lord, who was receiving the due worship that a devotee would naturally offer him, like in the Mahaprakash Leela, when he showed his form as the Supreme Lord, or when he showed it to the when he was a child and he stole the offerings of the Brahmana. All the different occasions that Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu displayed his identity as Krishna, he was doing so in his identity as the Supreme Personality of Godhead and receiving due worship and due respect. And when he wasn't getting it, for example, Damodar Pandit was not giving him the due respect and was criticizing him for associating with the son of a young Brahmani widow. And then for that, he was sent away, Damodar Pandit, because he had not recognized him as the Supreme Lord, and so on. So therefore it is said that Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu is not entering into the into all the different rasas with his devotees. The predominant rasa that the devotees have with Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu is the rasa of Dasya. They're all basically in this mood of being the servant of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. That is described in Chaitanya Charitamrita. Yeah. That he does not? Yeah, well, you know, I mean, that may be, but we see that the main literature for approaching pastimes of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu is the Chaitanya Charitamrita. It is like the most authorized literature about understanding the nature of the teachings and pastimes of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. And I think the same applies as what I said this morning about other scriptures. I think that whatever we read about Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu in other scriptures should underbuild and uphold the conclusions of the Chaitanya Charitamrita. And if we find some apparent contradictions, then we should just shelve them and not make them prominent in our understanding or presentation of the philosophy. I think the CC must be like the prominent factor in our understanding of the nature of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, and also in our presentation. This is the last, because then I'm going to go finish my rounds. No, it's getting late, so you get one more chance.
Okay, just one more reference. In the step where they send up, if it is mentioned in the paper that actually the Lord Chaitanya was teaching this mood of worship to Lord Shiva Ramananda, one of the great worship and not from the King and Shri.
Yeah.
Just like Lord Chaitanya was teaching the Rupa and Sanatana.
Well, you know, like, I mean, there are all kinds of things described like that, you know, the Astakaliya Leela of Lord Gauranga and so on. But we just don't see that this is stressed. This mood is not stressed in the Chaitanya Charitamrita. And nor by Srila Prabhupada in his purport, so I think we should just take that kind of reading as peripheral reading. You know, there's a lot of peripheral information which we may kind of read and absorb, but again, we must be careful to not give the same importance to those kind of conclusions as to the conclusions of the CC. The CC stands out as the most authoritative biography and presentation of the teachings of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. And everything else, we may know that it exists. You see, you read many things, and it's interesting to know that these things exist, so that in discussions with Vaishnavas, we are well informed, and when we hear things, we can say, yes, there are such and such points also mentioned in various sources, and we are familiar with them, but in the Chaitanya Charitamrita, these and these conclusions are given, and therefore we understand that that is the ultimate conclusion in the matter. Right? And if we don't take it like that, then where are we? I mean, if we would take another position and we would just say we take these other papers and literatures and so on, and we give them equal importance to the conclusions of the CC and to the purports of Prabhupada, then where are we? Then we are on slippery ice or on the slippery slide. And I personally don't think that we should go there. I think that that's not wise to take that position. It's not safe. It's not taking shelter. I think we must be careful. We may read, but we should not forget while we're reading to keep on taking shelter. Otherwise, we may be dragged along by the current, just like if you swim in the ocean too far. We may be dragged along by the current. So I think we should not be dragged along by some undercurrent in a direction where we'll wind up away from Prabhupada. I'm sure that Lalit Prasad Thakur had a different understanding about the exchanges of Gaura Gadadhar, right? And that if you would really want to go to find out more, I'm sure that in Mayapur, Gadadhar Pran, you know, Pandu, as Prabhupada initiated him, who kept on following him, Lalit Thakur, would give you a lot on the esoteric relationships of Gaura Gadadhar. and you might find a lot of interesting information there. But I would still rather stay with the Chaitanya Charitamrita and the purpose of Srila Prabhupada myself. Just because I'm not such a great scholar, I'm not so intelligent, and I'm afraid of Maya, and I think that when Prabhupada says that the CC is the most authoritative biography, then for me, I feel secure with that. I wouldn't want anything else. I also get papers from people, but I don't like them so much. And I got some papers about Lord Gauranga's Astakalya Lila, and it's just, I didn't like it so much. I love the Chaitanya Charitamrita. I can read it day and night. In fact, maybe that's what we should do after this. But I thank you for your scholarly contributions. Yeah. No, I understand. Yes. But what can we do? If we don't take the CC as the foremost, I don't know what to do then. It's our only hope. Prabhupada and the authorized books coming in the Prabhupada.
What is unauthorized about this Koran?
I think that we should understand that when we are reading about Lord Chaitanya, that we should understand that Lord Chaitanya particularly is performing his pastimes in this world, and that these pastimes are for the purpose of delivering the conditioned souls, and for the purpose of him tasting the mellows. Now, whatever may be there in terms of Lord Chaitanya at a particular point in time having performed something like an Astakalya Lila, regulated activities resembling Radha and Krishna. Whatever may have been there, we see that in the Chaitanya Charitamrita, in the Antya Lila, where such things are described, that we see that Lord Chaitanya's life is described in a different way. In a way where his ecstasies were governing him, and where in his ecstasies he was losing sense of time, losing sense of place, and where most of the time he was absorbed in a spontaneous transcendental madness. So I think that's the predominant remembrance and meditation. And I'm not saying that the Astakalya Lila description is not bona fide, I can't say. But all I can say is that it's not prominent, at least not in the descriptions of the CC, which is obviously which is very different, because it's very spontaneous what happens there, not very structured. Astakalya means very structured.
Yeah, but more is not, I think you published it already.
Yeah.
But more is not happening.
Yeah, well, I'm explaining that anyway, whatever, we'll have to see. what I know the source of the material, and I think that whatever may be. Again, gentlemen, we are. I am not saying that I'm an expert on the matter, right, of Lord Chaitanya's Astikarya Lila, but I would prefer that we are not publishing such things in the KBM, that we are not emphasizing such things in our preaching, that we keep such things as periphery details, and that we just focus on the Chaitanya Charitamrita, and that if we study other books about Lord Chaitanya, that we just use them to expand and underbuild the understanding of the Chaitanya Charitamrita. And, but I don't think we should go and into all kinds of details which are not expanding on there. I think we'll just then rather confuse and obscure the Chaitanya Charitamrita, which I think is a disservice. That's what I think, and it's an opinion. But my motto is better we stay with the CC as it is, better. And don't preach too much of the periphery literature. No, that's an opinion. And, but it can be read, it can be discussed, that's fine. You know, amongst us, that's fine. You know what I'm saying? That's okay. But I don't think it should be given much importance. Because where has it been given much importance? So I think we should not push it forward in that way. Just to be on the safe side, I would recommend that. What can I do?